O'Clock.
Die Tribüne erhebt sich und die Anne in Linz bebt ein erstes Mal. Linz schlägt zu! Das ist unglaublich, was die Black Wings hier zelebrieren!
Flying High, ein Unibet Hockey O'Clock Spezial.
It's the midway point of Flying High. It's the 5th out of 10 episodes and maybe the most important one, depending on whom you believe. He's a key cog of the 11-12 championship team in Linz. He's been mentioned as one of the most important players on the team by basically everybody, which makes me even happier to finally have him on the podcast. It's none other than Curtis Murphy. And Curtis, I'm so happy that you're taking the time to talk a little bit about the championship team in Linz of the 2011-2012 season.
No, not a problem. It was a special year and a special team. And I think everybody likes, we're not getting any younger. And you like to reminisce about some of those good times you had when you were younger. And I might not have been super young when that happened, but, it's definitely a highlight of my career.
Full disclaimer, you're still a very young 46. You look even younger than that. So way to go on that. But when thinking back of that team, and it's incredible, and I think I've mentioned it in all the previous four conversations, and I'm sure I'm going to mention it in all the next five conversations. It's incredible that it's already been 10 years, a solid decade ago that Linz won his championship. When you think back of it, what's the first memory that comes to mind?
For me, it was obviously, championship. Winning that championship is, for me, I've had championships before in the past. And it's kind of one of those things that when I get there and you see how intense the fans are, how loyal the fans are, I think winning at home was probably my best memory because we were able to enjoy it with the fans on the ice. It was a little crazy, but it was much more enjoyable. Because I've won championships at else places and we win them on the road. And yeah, you have a great time with your teammates, but to be able to enjoy it with your fans was also great.
I want to back it up a little deliberately, knowing that you came over not only from across the pond to Switzerland, and of course you had your Russia experience before that, but you stayed for 4 years in Switzerland, and Switzerland is quite different, not only from the level of play, but just how import players are regarded in general than they're being treated in Austria. When looking back on your experience in Langnau, obviously one of the not cellar dwellers that, and it's not meant in a disrespectful way, but probably Langnau not being a team that usually competes for a championship. After those 4 years, how hungry were you personally to compete for a championship?
Yeah, it was definitely a change for me. Going to Switzerland and being on a team that you weren't known for winning. Sorry. It was hard. I mean, being in the relegation round where you have to win to stay in the league was really odd for me again. So I guess, yeah, part of that was coming to a new team and, knowing we had a chance, we had a good team, and maybe being able to take it to that next level, I think was definitely, a little boost to my last few years of my career.
How much did you at that point, and we're jumping right into that summer or that spring summer of 2011, how much did you know about the Austrian league? At the very least, you got had the honor to play with a fellow Austrian for a couple of years in Langnau with Oliver Setzinger. Was there ever a time where you sat down and where you picked his brain a little bit about the Austrian league? Did you know anything at all, or was it a fresh and new experience?
It was pretty fresh and new. I mean, I knew what I was getting into. I had had Rob Dom as a coach already, so I knew the coach. I wasn't really going in blind on that. Player-wise, I didn't really know many of the guys. I had played against quite a few of them. Other than the big difference of having so many different Auslanders, that imports, that, it was going to be a little bit of an adjustment being Switzerland's got limited numbers and Austria's definitely got a lot more. But other than that, I didn't know a lot. Relied on my agent at the time to kind of give me an idea. I can't remember if I ever asked Setzinger about the league. Maybe more after I decided to go there. I'm not even sure.
But how did that recruiting call go with Rob Daum? What did he tell you? How did it all go down?
Well, it was pretty simple. I mean, I knew him from before. I'd had him for a coach for 2 years. So he didn't have to sell me on him being the coach there. And I just, you know, I think I might ask Setzinger just what the organization was like. Because for me, that's part of it. If you don't have a solid organization to back you, and I like having a stadium full of stands or fans. Like Switzerland was great for that too. Like our fans there were unbelievable. And, you know, I came right into Linz and it was the same feeling there. And I think, you know, that's definitely a sell for me. And I was able to get a 2-year contract, which with my family having the 4 kids is definitely a huge deal.
When looking at the leagues, or when you arrived at that point, when you tried to compare the leagues, obviously a very limited number or a very limited amount of import players in Switzerland, whereas there are just a lot, have been a lot, still are a lot, and will be a lot of import players in Austria. And that's no judgment right here, because obviously they bring a lot to the table. But was there maybe a tiny bit more pressure of being an import player in Switzerland on you and the others than in Austria?
Oh, definitely. I mean, they're not scared to spend a little more money, you might say, too. They have a little more money there when it comes to like revenue for the teams. But you definitely, you do have more pressure there. Like you said, you know, when you're one of 3 or 4 compared to one of 10 or 11, obviously eyes are trained on you a little bit more. Although that can be a good thing. That can promote you to want to play better and, you know, get more involved in the game, because, you know, on my side of it, I'm rolling down my career, getting to the end of my career, you know, so this maybe keeps me hungry to play the game harder and, you know, want to be out on that ice and playing with the younger guys.
You mentioned the right keyword, that hunger, and you already mentioned it. You had won championships. Then in Langnau, 3 out of 4 years, you played in kind of a survival series in the relegation. How big was that hunger after your Langnau experiences to get back to championship winning hockey?
It was high. I mean, after you get that taste of winning something, it's, you want it again. And you see great athletes like Michael Jordan's, you know, Shaq, guys like that, Kobe. They, basketball wise, like they, once they've won, they've gone on to win over and over because you get that taste. And I was actually listening to Pat Leahy's, and he said, you know, he lost out in the finals of 1 year. And I think it was my second year in the league when I first started. I lost Game 7 of the finals, then went on the next year to win it in Game 7 of the finals. So, you know, it's nice to lose, but it's great to win. But to win in a fashion like that, I think, just like you said, it keeps your hunger alive. And having been in relegation, which is a totally different animal compared to being able to vie for a championship, that's definitely keeps you motivated.
Now, even though you had that championship pedigree, even though you had a long and successful career, a lot of Austrian fans didn't necessarily know Curtis Murphy could bring to the table. So you weren't a known commodity when you first touched down in Linz, but taking you back to arriving in Linz, what was a maybe very first uniquely Austrian experience that you made? And mind you, you were in Switzerland and those countries compare fairly well as regards standard of living and everything else. But what was the first Austrian thing that you experienced?
For me, compared to like Switzerland, when I got there, I definitely felt a lot more Western feel to it, like more of a North American feel, whereas Switzerland was very Swiss. They keep everything the way they want it. You know, it's a don't go wrong. It's a beautiful country. But when I got to Austria, it just felt more, I don't want to say Americanized, but have a lot of more Western influence in it, and just a little more open to, you know, having somebody like me come in and be able to have a job in Austria and not, you know, just kind of be an outsider. So maybe just that feeling of being accepted more in Austria as compared to Switzerland, where you are the Auslander, right? So I guess that would be my first real sense when I got there.
You come into Linz, you get into the arena for the first time, you try to settle into your apartment and everything that goes with it in experiencing and starting to live in a new city. What did you know about the program beforehand?
Not really much, actually. I came in not really knowing, you know, the backstory of Linz very much. I didn't know a lot about the league. I had heard a few things about it being very comparable to the German league. And so, you know, when I looked at it, a lot of it was family related, bus rides, travel, stuff like that, where, you know, the league was much more accommodating for that, where if you go to Germany, you could, you know, you got a lot of long way to go. And I've had enough of that in my career, and I was ready to be in a smaller, more condensed league. And, you know, it turned out great. I mean, yeah, you walk into Linz and it's maybe a little bit older arena. It's not huge, but once you get fans in it, it became one of the best arenas in the league.
A couple of weeks ago, I asked Pat Leahy a similar question. Basically, he being one of the old dogs in the locker room, and obviously having to look out and then having to see who comes in. Now, a role reversal, you're the new guy in town. You kind of don't know what the locker room atmosphere would be, what the mood would be, how the guys would be. And you've had that experience before. You've had it with the Arrows, obviously, being the new guy on the team. You've had it with Jaroslavl. You had it with Langnau in your first year. What are kind of the first steps when getting into a new locker room, when getting to a new team? Is it saying hello to everyone? Hey, I'm the new guy, or you try to introduce yourself with a splash?
It was actually pretty easy, because we had a lot of new guys on that team. I think maybe five new imports. And so coming in, a lot of us were new guys. So it's not like I was one new guy walking into the whole room of old guys. And when you have a group like Pat Leahy, Westland, the Lucas brothers, you have some older players that have been there for a while, Baumgartner, like, who are all great guys. And, you know, you walk in, they welcome you with open arms. And for me, it's, I think Pat said it too. You go out with them during camp and you enjoy, you know, sitting down, having a beer, and you talk about your careers. And it's hockey, such a small world that it ends up your best friends probably with the same guy, and have played with them two or three times in your career. So I think, you know, hockey wise, it's pretty easy for a lot of guys to come into locker rooms and feel pretty much right at home within 1 to 2 days. I think that's part of hockey that is makes it such an amazing sport, is, you know, when you're on the team, you're on the team.
But taking the listeners back to that summer of 2011, you entering a new locker room, obviously with a whole lot of new guys, was kind of a changing of the guard in Linz. Who, for whatever reason, caught your attention first, or who made you go like, this is an interesting dude, this is an interesting experience?
You know what? It would probably be a toss-up between the two Dannys, Danny Ehrman and Danny Oberkofler. I think, you know, like Ehrman, you know, I kind of knew him from before. But it's like, you know, you come in and then there's Oberkofler. He's pretty much the same guy. You know, always got jokes, always doing funny stuff. And he's an Austrian guy, and he speaks great English. So, you know, I'm not losing anything in translation. And I think, you know, we just had that team that everybody would, you know, get on everybody, but is always in a good manner. And I think that was part of it.
The interesting thing is that you already had experience playing under Rob Daum being the new coach for a team with a lot of new players. And what I kept hearing the past couple of weeks is how much heads were spinning early in training camp. How much of an advantage was it for you to have already had that playing experience, and how much pity was involved in looking at the other guys who had not problems, but struggled a little picking up the system?
Yeah, it's he is very, not analytical, but he is very in depth in his coaching. Like when he gets his mindset on like forechecks and, you know, defensive zone, neutral zone, there's usually six or seven different variations of that because he's a really smart guy and, you know, he really goes in depth. So like if he wants to change something, yeah, there could be so many different variations. And I did feel bad because obviously he only speaks English. And, you know, most of our Austrian guys were pretty good, but still some things like translation, just, it gets lost. And, you know, for a young kid like Patrick Spanner, you know, it was pretty hard for him. Maybe the older guys maybe caught on a little quicker, but just having my experience with Rob, I already knew coming in that, yeah, there probably was going to be six or seven different breakouts and six or seven different, four checks, and that, you know, we could be switching from period to period, which we did that year.
I haven't had the pleasure of knowing Rob Dom for more than a decade now. I know how much he values right-handed defensemen, that it's kind of his quote-unquote prized possession. If and when he finds one, he'd likes to hang on to them. You coming in as a right-handed defenseman, did you already know what exactly he wanted from you, or did your assignments kind of change over time?
At the start, I think I definitely knew exactly what he wanted. Obviously, he's bringing me in for a power play D-man to be kind of that steady guy back there and get things set up. And at that time, an older guy to be a veteran in the room. I think, you know, it's, you hit a certain age and usually it's 30. You kind of turn into the older guy in the room, and, you know, it comes with part of the job. And I think, you know, basically at the start, I was that puck moving D. And then by the end of my career, I was that D man back there just to keep everything settled down, calm, you know, me and Bob Lucas just having the experience back there and, you know, trying to get the young guys to do what they needed to do.
Now, 30 is not really old anymore in hockey terms, but I was always wondering, and what a lot of people obviously wonder also, are wondering about also, is at what point, at what age, like physical ability and experience are kind of at their peaks. Was that maybe exactly that Linz year where you say from a physical standpoint, you were still more than good enough, but from an experience level, everything started to slow down?
I think, you know, you hit a certain peak, and usually it's probably 30 to 35 where you both physically still feeling good enough, and mentally you've had a long time to learn the game and learn how to play with other players and different situations. So yeah, definitely. I think, you know, you probably have that peak time, I would say, from 30 to 35. And then guys who can play longer are the guys that are able to kind of overcome your physical lack of, I guess, ability and use your mind a little more. And, you know, you kind of saw it, you know, he had me, and then, you know, Bob kept doing it. And then we brought in Jan Axel, who was an older D-man. You know, the guy, his knees were bad, but, you know, he played a great game. And at that point, he's using more the mental side of it than he is physical.
You coming in, you being again under the tutelage of Rob Dom, you being one of the quote unquote elder statesmen in the room, we're heading into the season, but just because there's so much in it, I got a statement from Rob Dom. I asked him about you personally and what he was looking for in bringing you in and what he got, and he told me a whole lot of more. We're listening to a statement by your former coach just sent to me a couple of weeks ago, and then we'll talk about it.
Curtis Murphy, for me, he was, if not the key to our team, definitely one of them. We were able to sign him in the summer. He's a right-handed defenseman, which is always a difficult thing to find, but he was a very gifted offensive player. He could make plays that a lot of other players couldn't make. He made our power play extremely effective. He was a little guy, but he was very, very competitive and calm and composed with the puck. And for me, looking at it in hindsight, I think he was probably the best player in the league that year. And he did so many things so well. Again, offensively, he was dynamic. He made all the easy plays. He made plays that were difficult, and a very unassuming person. You know, he led by example on the ice. He wasn't loud. He had an excellent resume. He played in the American Hockey League and was a strong player there. And he also played in Switzerland and had impact in that league as well. But for me, he was, I think he was really the key guy in giving us the confidence we needed to be the type of team that we became. And I can't say enough good things about what Curtis contributed to our team, both as a player and then also quietly as a leader. Again, not a vocal guy, but just, such a good player, but very, very humble and very team first orientated. And when your top players are like that, the other players are going to have the same type of mentality. And I think Curtis was really key in all of those areas for us. And without Curtis Murphy, I don't know that we would be having this conversation today, because, I think he was very, very key in us becoming a championship team. There's no question about that.
Wow, that's humbling for me.
I just wanted to say, I don't know how often you're in touch with Coach Daum, but when I first heard it, I'm like, whoa, some very big words in there.
Yeah, I mean, that's very humbling. I am a humble guy, and I like to think, yes, I played a pretty good part on our team, but I think our team was made up of a lot of good parts. And I think that's the reason we won it, from the imports, but even just the key Austrian players that made our team the best team that year.
One thing that I want to elaborate on or expand on a little bit, he called you one of the best, if not the best player in the league. And of course, these are pretty big words, and we had a lot of good players back then. But you personally, was there a point in a season where you, from an individual standpoint, thought, this is really going well?
I think, maybe the midpoint of the season where we were having a good year, things were going well, and you kind of felt that gel on the team. Like, you guys were going out together, having good times together. I may not have had as many. I had four kids and ended up having the moniker as dad that year. But, it was, you could feel it in the locker room. Every time you walked into that locker room in the mornings, everybody was happy. Everybody's getting their coffee, figuring out what the young guys did the night before, asking me what I did with my kids that night. It was a good mix of guys, and we had a really good mix of imports and Austrians. And I think, I always come back to, they always say, the imports make the team there, but if we don't have a good set of Austrians behind us, you're not going to win. You can only play so many people so much.
That gelling process, everything that went on in the locker room, and of course the run towards the championship, that's what we're going to talk about after a quick break here on Flying High, a Unibet Hockey O'Clock special edition. Unibet Hockey O'Clock. Flying High wird euch in den nächsten 10 Episoden mit den besten Geschichten rund um die Black Wings 2011-2012 versorgen.
aber auch eure Anekdoten wollen und sollen gehört werden. Schickt eure Erinnerung, eine Episode oder ein kleines Ereignis mit der letzten Linzer Meistermannschaft an unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. Das ist unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. Die besten Einsendungen werden dann in einem ganz besonderen Rahmen verlesen und gewürdigt. Und unter allen Einsendungen werden insgesamt 10 Unibet Hockey O'Clock T-Shirts verlost.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.
Back on episode 5 of Flying High here within the Unibet Hockey O'Clock podcast. It is still Curtis Murphy, one of the key cogs on defense for the Black Wings championship team of 2011-2012. And Curtis, right before the break, we were talking about training camp and a lot of spinning heads, obviously, in the locker room. What was the point of the year, or maybe early in the season, where you thought, okay, this is really starting to gel? What were kind of telltale signs that this could be going in the direction everybody wanted it to be?
I think you hit that point where the team, like, you get lines. Your lines are set up. That's what I'm looking for. Sorry. You know, we got it into the spot where you had Heisey, Keller, and Ehrman in a line, which is a very good offensive line. And then the Ouellette line, who were all seasoned players, experienced two-way players. We had our kid line that just brought tons of energy, all three of them. You know, could skate like the wind and just, you know, bring so much energy. Philly Lucas on the fourth line with a couple bruisers that, you know, just you put him out there, he's going to give you everything he's got every night. And that was, you know, that's what you wanted. And I think on the D end, you know, we had just a good solid group of D men, you know, being from Bob Lucas that would throw himself in front of anything on the ice, and then picking up Oliveira near the end. Just another kind of veteran on the backside, and, you know, some of our young guys with Wiedemann and Mitterdorfer, you know, and we just had a good solid group. And then you put a guy like Westland behind us in net and just solid, you know, we had Lawrence Heron in there every once in a while and he played his heart out, and, you know, he only gets a few games, so you want to play in front of him. And I think, you know, yeah, once we got kind of solidified in our lines and just kept rolling, I think we just became that train where, you know, you put one line out after another. None of them were the same lines. Like, we didn't have two straight, huge offensive lines. We had one that could play solid defense. And I think Pat said it in his, where, you know, they would be the shutdown line some nights. We would just put them against the other team's best line. And they weren't out there to score. They were letting the other guys score. And they were just there to do their defensive job. And, you know, I think that was something that maybe some of the other teams in the league didn't have. They didn't have a line that was experienced enough to do that to, say, us, even.
Now, when talking to former members of the championship team, a lot of them keep mentioning the intensity in training and obviously the compete level. As far as you can remember, that daily grinding in practice, how do you look back on it now? And I've got a follow-up question after that.
You know, on any team, really, like, you get to it, and if you're not intense in practice, it's not going to translate to the ice. And I think, like you said, that was one thing we really had. We're always going at it in practice, maybe not to where you're trying to hurt another guy, but, you know, you're playing like it's a game. And it's an old adage, it's always said by every coach, but if you don't play hard in practice, you're not going to play hard in the game.
Follow-up question, obviously, is a fairly logical one. You coming in as one of the prized free agents from Switzerland, obviously, maybe with a kind of bullseye on your back, because any offensive player would like to make you look bad in practice and score on you. Whom did you hate going against the most? And hate is a strong word, but who was like the guy who raised your compete level?
It's funny because, you know, there's great offensive players. There's, you know, Philly Lucas is going to work his hardest, but, you know, Spannering, just the raw kid, strong kid that just, you don't know where he's going. I don't know if he scared me more than anything, but you know, he was a great kid and he always brought intensity to the practice. And, you know, the one thing I remember is, you know, with it being such a crazy, you know, setup that, you know, Rob had so many different things. You know, Patrick's English wasn't great at the start. Like he didn't understand a lot and Phil had to translate for him a lot. He would inevitably kind of ruin a lot of drills. So you know, he wasn't ruining them by doing the wrong thing. He was just so excited, I think, and he wouldn't get it right. He would just do the wrong one at the wrong time. So I think, you know, he was always 100% go. I think that, you know, for me being an old guy, some practices, I didn't want to go 100%, but, you know, I had to if he was coming bearing down on me.
And it's still going strong. And guess where? Of course, in Switzerland. Swiss league, second league, but still great career from Patrick Spanring so far. You've already mentioned it. You're coming in as a family man, as a father of four, having to deal with young men, basically some of them not even being adults for a very long time. How does one have to envision like the conversations? You basically have a kids back home, they telling you about the last night out. Did you ever envy them, or did you just try to tell them, wait, what's in for you? There are a lot more things to come, a lot better things to come your way with family and kids.
Oh yeah, you know, it's funny now. I can look at them and I see, you know, them with kids, and they post on their Facebook their kids and stuff. But you know, at my point, that was my life, right? Like I had four kids, so you know, I'm not going out partying every day. I can't. And that's just life, really. I mean, everybody does it. And when you're younger, you enjoy a lot of other things. And then when you get older, you realize a lot of those other things aren't really super important. And you know, your family is. And I think, you know, Adrian Wiedemann coined me with being dad. And I had the nickname as dad for my 4 years in Lentz in the locker room. And you know what? I owned it. I was the dad of the team. And, you know, by the end of it, some of those guys that were calling me dad all the time started having babies too. So, you know, it is a circle, and that's what happens. I just dealt with it.
Just the other day, I had a veteran player who's playing in Austria here on the podcast. He's now 38 years old and 37 years old, mind you. And he's playing with a lot of young people on his team. And I asked him what kind of locker room rule number one is. And he said, don't let him get the remote that controls the music in the locker room. What was Curtis Murphy's locker room rule number one?
Probably the coffee. Don't drink all the coffee on me. As long as there's coffee in there in the morning, I was good to go. Well, part of the music too. I agree with that, because some of the music the kids listen to, like my kids listen to, I do not like. I mean, give me some AC/DC, Metallica, stuff like that in the locker room. And then, you know, I'm a kid from a farm, so I like my country too. But, you know, they get to the locker room and, you know, maybe Danny Oberkofer wanting to play some disco Austrian music that I'm just like, yeah, no, let's just keep it relaxed here and I'll drink my coffee and not have to act like I'm at a disco.
I mentioned it before. I was thinking about labeling this 10-part podcast Magic Carpet Ride, because at certain times it indeed felt like one. If you look back on the regular season, where there were very few bumps in the road, what comes to mind first?
Great start. I mean, we had a great, you know, first however many games that first section was. Was it 36 or something like that? Anyways,
44.
It was 44. Okay. So we played well, had a good, and then we kind of hit that second round, what was it called? The qualification?
Intermediate round, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that was, part of it was, we weren't used to it. I mean, I was a new guy to it. Like, you know, and then we had four or five other guys that had never done it before. And I think it was kind of one of those, there's a letdown. Like it's, yeah, we had a little, what, 1 or 2 point lead at that point. And then you go into it and you're like, well, you just kind of relax a bit, I think. And I think we did, because I don't know what our actual numbers were coming out of that, but we were in the middle of a pack coming out of it. So, you know, that is kind of, you don't want it, but I think we kind of had a little bit of a letdown at that point.
Am I saying correct that it was 40 games in that first kind of championship phase, quote unquote,
okay.
10 games in the intermediate round, and where you won 29 out of 40 games in the first phase, you won only 6 out of 10 in that intermediate round. Was there ever a point where you thought this is not the 100% focused, intense team of the first phase that we're now seeing in this intermediate round, where it's just quote unquote for placement?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we weren't really knowing it for a lot of our guys. But yeah, I think there was a point that we were just kind of, I don't want to say not 100%, but I think, you know, just being a little bit lazy. And I think, you know, after that coming out and not having a good kind of showing way we should have, right, from our first 40 games, I think that kind of clued in for us too a little bit. Like, I think guys realized, like, you know, if we can drop into that, then we've got to pick it up for playoffs, because anybody can beat you at that point.
How hard was it to kind of regain that focus, or what did the leaders of the team try to do to get everyone ready for the playoffs?
Well, I think it's really just getting a mindset, like you said, with practice. Get back into doing the right stuff in practice, and maybe not taking a practice off. You know, it wasn't a time of year to just be like, you know what, I'm not going to put 100% into practice. And I think we really kind of kicked it up with just everybody realizing that you still got to go. And I think, you know, we had, actually the kid line was pretty good. I think during the playoffs, they really picked it up. And I think, you know, that was, I know a lot of people say, you know, yeah, I know I had a good playoff and goalies, but I think our Austrians, they really gave us that extra little push. And, you know, near the end, we kind of relied on them.
Let's take it back to February 19th of 2012. Lindstedt cruised through the regular season. Even with that kind of stumble in the intermediate round, you still went into the playoffs as number one seed. Each and everyone in Linz probably expects you to win the championship. A lot of outside pressure on you guys to win the championship. Then there's this Vienna team that qualified for the playoffs on the very last day of the regular season, and they equaled out in Linz. Now, in hindsight, how necessary, how important, as stupid as it may sound, was losing that game one?
It probably was the best thing for us. You know, you don't want to lose that first game and lose home ice or give back home ice. But at that point, you realize that they're bringing in a ton of momentum and they were ready to go and we weren't. And I think, you know, maybe that was one thing that was just the right thing to happen for us. You know, you don't want to lose a game, but at that point, it kind of maybe clued into some guys, or, you know, maybe everybody in general on the team that, hey, we've got to pick it up. Like, we got to get back to where we were, because they're at a higher level than where they were. And we got to get to a better level than we are now.
Obviously, the series went the full distance, went the full 7 games. No one expected that at the start of the series. If you look at some of the key turning points of that series, at the very least the ones that you can still remember, what would that be?
I think one of the big ones is coming back in the second game and having a good game. And, you know, win or lose, if you don't rebound after that first loss, and, you know, it was one of Rob's things all year, we don't lose 2 games in a row. And even during the year, it's a simple thing, but if you don't, you're going to win more than you lose. And even when it comes to playoffs like that, you can't lose 2 games in a row. even a 7-game series, it comes so quick. If you get down two, it's really hard to come back. So I think, you know, getting that second game under our belt and kind of just getting that confidence back and knowing that if we play well, we're going to win. That's probably the main key really coming out of that first one.
And just trying to prove that it's obviously not a fluky saying never lose two in a row. You did just that. You led 3-1 and then lost two in a row against them, which got us a game seven as broadcasters, which got you into that dicey situation that a game seven always is for both teams. How frustrating was it to let him back in the series?
It's never good. I mean, obviously you get to 3-1, you want to put him away. There's, you know, you're like, okay, yeah, we have wiggle room, but then sometimes that's a slippery slope. And like you see, you know, all of a sudden you can lose two really quickly. They get the momentum back. And it's funny, like hockey is such a momentum sport. It starts with the little kids. Like when they're young, it's crazy. Like you can be a totally better team, but if you get momentum when you're young, it's the other team's going to win for sure. But for us, I think that was the point. Like we got to 3-1 and they got that win. And they just got their momentum back. And sometimes, you know, it takes a game or two to get that back. But luckily we did in game seven and, you know, went on from there.
You won game seven and the next opponent was Ljubljana. You hadn't had a point in the playoffs up to that point. And from an individual standpoint, with the two goals that you had during that playoff run, both of them were scored against Ljubljana in a semis. Did you ever think about the lack of scoring, especially in the seven quarterfinal games? Did you kind of feel that during the Ljubljana series, your scoring was heating up again, or did you never care?
Well, it's always in the back of your mind. Obviously, I'm a offensive defenseman, and that's part of what I got paid to do, right? Was be the offensive defenseman. But at that point, I mean, Adrian Wiedemann had been having a great year, and he had taken on a lot of offensive. You know, we had Jan Axel Oliveira who could score too on the defensive end. So, you know, maybe the pressure was off me a little bit, but you know, when it comes to playoffs, I usually like, if we have forwards that are scoring, I let them do what they do. I mean, I'll get the puck to them and let them do that. And I think, you know, I mentioned it, like we had three lines that were scoring, and you know, when they're scoring, I don't put as much pressure on myself to think, okay, yeah, you got to go out there and get a goal. My idea is keep it out of our net and let our forwards do the scoring.
But then again, there was an important goal, and that's also confirmed by our statisticians over at Unibet, who had an in-depth look at everything that you did that year on the ice. Game two on the semis in Ljubljana, obviously thousands of eager Ljubljana fans expecting the first win in the series, and they score with 75 seconds in the game. And the answer, obviously, coming at your hands, the all-important equalizer in Linz at that time and during that game, never look back. Do you remember the goal? And if so, how do you look back on it?
I honestly can't remember the goal. I have too many things in my head over the years, but I mean, it's, you just got to do what you got to do, right? Like, you know, at that point, you know, you got to step up. And I think, you know, if it wasn't me then, you know, it was, you know, Adrian Wiedemann another time, or Danny Obikofer, or, you know, somebody else was doing the scoring. And I think, you know, when it came to playoffs, we just, you couldn't put two lines out there and against us. We had four that any one of our four lines could score. And I, you know, it's tough to defend a team when you can throw any line out there and you can't relax and not think they're going to score on you.
Now, from the outset looking in, and that game kind of proved it, and your equalizer after them taking the early lead. From the outset, it always seemed that Linz was the team that always had an answer. If it was an early setback, if you were down two goals, you were still able to come back. How did it seem, or how did it work on the inside? Was there this team that one might envision oozing of confidence?
I would think so. Like when you get to that time of the year, I think during the whole year, we've had a lot of times where we did have the answer. And I think just being able to do that, you know, by the end of the year, yeah, you have confidence. Like you go down with like you said, a minute and 15 left in the game, you know, you still think you can score until there's no time on that clock. You think you're going to get back into it. And, you know, that confidence comes with already having done it all year. And, you know, a lot of teams, if you haven't done it all year, it's hard to find that confidence. And I think when you find a lot of teams that end up winning, that's one thing that you really see. They're never out of a game. And that is confidence.
One thing that I need to correct, obviously, you did score in the quarterfinals because a scoring streak, your longest scoring streak, all the season started or of the playoff started in quarterfinal number 5. You had a 6-game point scoring streak, which in the playoffs itself is fairly impressive when you play the best in the league. But I want to revert to something that's going to be the official trivia question on this podcast. Obviously, users back home can still win one of the coveted DVDs summing up the championship run of the Black Wings. And the trivia question this time around has got something to do with your scoring streak. You had an incredible consistency when talking about scoring. And there weren't a lot of games where you didn't score. So the trivia question this time around for all the users to take part in and send their questions to Unibet, hockeyoclock@gmail.com and only unibethockeyoclock@gmail.com. What was the longest scoring drought of the season, as in number of games in a row without a point? Would you care to take a wild guess?
I would not have known, but I think you alluded to it earlier. I would guess 7-8 games, maybe.
Not too bad a guess. The number is an impressive one for a defenseman. That's the only hint viewers and listeners, pardon me, will get. You were incredibly consistent throughout the year in terms of your scoring. Not a lot of games in a row without a point. Getting back to the playoffs and obviously you cruising through the semis as it seemed, also Klagenfurt cruising through their semis, both of you won in 5 games. We talked about the importance of losing that first game in the quarterfinals. Wasn't losing the first game in the finals more important in retrospect or equally important?
I would say probably equally important. I mean, you never, like I said, you never want to lose the first one, but I think maybe it gives you a little kick. And, you know, coming off a week of not having games, you know, that's obviously not an excuse because they did too. So usually you want to have less amount of days off because you want to keep that feeling. And I think when it came to it, that I guess it wasn't a bad thing for us to lose it because it worked out good for us. But I mean, personally, would I have wanted to win the first one? Oh, yeah, for sure. But, you know, losing it worked out. And, you know, obviously it gives you a little more drive the next game. And, you know, it worked out.
Now, haven't had that experience of the Vienna game. Haven't had that losing experience against Klagenfurt in game one of the finals. Was it just reverting back to plan B, the same plan that worked against Vienna, or did you do something different, try to do things differently in a locker room?
I don't think there was anything really different. I think we knew, like, we have a good team. It's just hockey is hockey. You know, you lose that first one, well, now you got to win the second one. And, you know, it is a 7-game series. So, again, put that mantra of don't lose 2 games in a row into effect and try and come out and win that next one. And, you know, there's a lot of cliches in hockey, but they're a cliche because a lot of times they work. So I think it was more just getting back on track, you know, and getting ourselves back in the win column and then go from there.
it eventually turned out to be a 5-game series in a finals. Was there, and it's interesting, and I don't know how good your German still is, having talked to Daniel Oberkofler the other week, because in there, Martin Gabemeyer mentioned in a story the point where he thought might have turned the tide and where he thought the team never looked back. Was there kind of this point during the series where you thought this is our championship and only our championship, or did it take you personally until the final whistle was blown?
Well, I think, you know, I had confidence in our team. And I think even going into the final, I felt like we were going to win. I mean, I'm not I don't want to claim to know I knew it for sure, but coming into that final, I think we just had such a solid team. I mean, you spoke of two guys that, you know, were a big part of us in the finals. It's just being a group of three young guys to go out there and just create havoc. And I think, you know, we had our two top lines too that could score. We had a good solid D. We had a great goalie. And, you know, I really thought overall we were going to win. Do I remember exactly when, you know, that I kind of felt like there was a switch? No, I mean, by that time I was pretty old already. So I guess I'm, you know, seasoned enough that I don't get too excited up and down. But I think, you know, when it came to it, I just thought like we were at that point in the season that, you know, we checked all our boxes. We had the team that could win. And I think, you know, as long as we played the way we should, we would.
You went on a 17 games playoff campaign. During your career, you had two campaigns that were even longer. And when people who've won championships are brought in, one starts to talk about, well, he's got that championship pedigree and it's so important for the locker room. Was there ever a point where you thought, this championship pedigree that you got helped the team, helped someone stay even keel?
I mean, when you can go from not having won something, you get excited. It's just natural. And, you know, I had won championships and, you know, I kind of hit that point where I think I played 24 games the one year, 24 extra games. And, you know, I'm playing into July. Like I played as far as I went, I think it was like July 17th. And it's just a long season, but you realize, you know, all that effort you're putting in during the year, it comes down to it in the end. And I think, yeah, maybe I was a little more calm than some of the guys who hadn't won before. And I think, you know, I don't scream in the locker room. And when I do, it's for a purpose. So I think guys listen a lot closer. And I can't remember if I ever did, but I think that might have helped. I think being able just to be a little more relaxed, not get too flustered when, you know, maybe we go down a goal or, you know, we're down a couple goals, but there's lots of time. And, you know, it was a good feeling. We had some younger guys too. We brought in three or four younger guys at the start of the year. And I think they were feeling it too. And I hope I was a calming influence to them. I usually tried not to get too crazy in the room, but it is enjoyable and was enjoyable.
I want to take you back to April 1st in 2012 and obviously April Fool's Day, one of the most successful ones in club history. When the clock at that day or on that day at final game number 5 hit double zeros in the third, where were you and what went through your head?
I was on the ice and yeah, it was great. I mean, you know, I hate to keep saying it, but like when I go back and I have won championships and there's different reasons why the championships are so great. And this one was a lot of it for a lot of those guys who hadn't won yet, you know, older players like a Pat Leahy who had been down the road, had been to finals and hadn't won. And, you know, the Lucas boys who had been with Lance for a long time already and, you know, maybe hadn't won anything. And to be able to see them happy and so excited, and then to be with our fans come streaming onto the ice, you know, it's just, there's so much joy in the rink at that point, you know, it's great. And, you know, now you start talking about it again and you just remember those, those feelings you had, and, you know, you bring your family onto the ice. Like, that was one, that was pretty much the only championship where I really got to enjoy it with my family. They were old enough to understand it, and, you know, coming onto the ice, they're all on the ice at the same time. Like, it's, that for me was probably one of the best things, was having them there and then my extended family hockey team being able to enjoy it like they did.
You just mentioned it doesn't happen all too often that you get to experience something with your family. What were kind of the first steps putting your baby kid into the cup or something like that?
Yeah, he wasn't a tiny baby at that time. He was already, I guess, 7 years old, and we sat him in the cup, and we had a family picture with it. And I may have had a couple beer already, but it was great. And then, you know, my two older kids had a lot of friends at the rink at that point, and, you know, it was a good, great start to my 4 years in Linz. And, you know, obviously looking back on it, it's a highlight of my career.
Don't want to go from a highlight to a not really low light, but to the drought that started after winning the championship, and that's been going on ever since. But why was it so hard to get to the top again in the next 3 years that you were able to experience in Linz?
It's always hard. I mean, sports and teams are, it's a very fickle group to get together to be able to just recreate what you had. There's very few teams in history that of any sport that can put a lot together. And when they do, it seems like they kept a very, very large core group together. And I think, you know, over the years, we kind of lost guys here and there, you know, whether they would go to different leagues or, and, you know, it hurts. It does hurt. And sometimes they're just hard to replace. And, you know, it's a hard job for a GM. It's a hard job for a coach. And, you know, when it comes down to that, it's really hard to kind of get everybody to mesh together that well. And I think, you know, when you realize you have it, it's that much more enjoyable.
One last great stat that the fine people at Unibet provided me with about your time in Linz, and it's a fairly impressive one. You at an advanced stage of your career, enjoying tremendous longevity. You only missed 2 out of a possible 264 games as a Blackwing. Now to all the young listeners who maybe don't remember the longevity of Curtis Murphy anymore, was there a secret to this success, or as in most cases, just a combination of luck, doing the right thing for your body and just gritting through a couple of injuries?
Well, obviously, you know, the older you get, the more injuries you usually have. But like I said earlier, the smarter you get too. So, you know, maybe I don't put myself in situations I used to when I was younger and I knew I'd bounce back from getting hit 20 times a game. Instead, I just try not to get hit as much. But I think, you know, age obviously is a factor. And, you know, I was very fortunate when I was in Linz not to have any severe injuries. You know, I did have quite a few in Switzerland, so it was, maybe I spent all my time in the hospital there instead of Linz. So maybe that was what happened, and maybe everything that was weak got hurt there, and I was able just to ride the wave in Linz and be able to play all those games.
Last question of a great conversation. I'm so thankful that you already took almost an hour out of your valued time. And I've kind of asked this question at the very end to a couple of Linz protagonists at that year. I'm going to rephrase it a little bit, because obviously we all know what's going to remain and what remains from that team. But if we talk in 10 years during the 20-year anniversary of the championship about this team, what do you think might be the first thing that comes to your mind then?
Definitely the celebration after on the ice. I think that was special because, you know, I hate to say it again, I've won before and I've never had that where all the fans are on the ice with us. Everybody's family's there. You know, it was just a special thing that it was totally different. You know, parades are usually the same. Going out drinking with the teammates afterwards are usually the same. Everything's great and everything's fun, but having that instance where I'm on the ice with, you know, thousands of fans who are going nuts, you know, that's probably the one memory that will stick in my head for the year.
And I'm sure you put a lot of these memories back into the heads of a lot of Linz fans. I'm so thankful that you took the time. Great talking to you about hockey and obviously about that revered championship team of 11-12. Thank you so much.
No problem. Thank you for having me. And it's always great to talk and reminisce about old teams.
Exzellente Unterhaltung mit dem schönsten Sport der Welt.
Unibet Hockey O'Clock.